So March the 13th, 1912. This is volume 11. The baptism of the victim is a baptism of fire and has effects superior to the baptism of water. Now, what Jesus is going to be talking about here doesn't apply to you and me. It's for victim souls. Is that okay? So Jesus said, "My daughter, the baptism at birth is by water, and therefore it has the power of purifying, but of not removing tendencies and passions." Now, the way that's normally expressed in the church is that it doesn't remove concupiscence. Yeah. So you still have the problems with the world, the flesh and the devil. Is that okay? On the other hand, the baptism of the victim's soul, you'd have to put in the word soul there, because unfortunately we have a different meaning for victim nowadays. The victim's soul is a baptism of fire. Therefore, it has not only the power of purifying, but of consuming any passion or evil tendency. In other words, it removes concupiscence, which is an amazing gift. Because you'll never hear Louisa talking about having problems with the world, the flesh or the devil, will you? No. She just had a battle with the demons at the beginning to show her how to do the battling. Even more, Jesus said, "I myself baptize the soul bit by bit." Now, as you know, he does everything bit by bit with us because we couldn't take it any other way. "My thought baptizes the thought of the soul. My heartbeat baptizes her heartbeat, my desire, her desire, and so on. However, this baptism is carried out between myself and the soul according to whether she gives herself to me without ever taking it back." Now, that's the bit you need to underline, because it's quite easy to say yes today and then sort of make compromises a few days later. "Without ever taking back what she's given to me. So this is why, my daughter, you do not feel the evil tendencies and the like." Now, there's Louisa, that concupiscence has been removed from her, an incredible gift. "It comes from your state of victim soul." You need to add in the word soul again. "And I tell you this for your consolation. So tell Father G to be well attentive, for this is the mission of missions, the apostolate of apostolates. I want him always with me and all intent within me." Okay. So March the 15th, 1912. "The divine will is the sanctity of sanctities. The souls who live in the divine will are true living hosts." This is a wonderful teaching now. So Louisa says, she continues in her usual state. So Jesus said, "My daughter, my will is the sanctity of sanctities," because the divine will is the essence of God. It has to be the sanctity of sanctities. "The soul who does my will," that means lives in my will, "however small, ignorant and unknown, leaves the other saints behind in spite of their prodigies, sensational conversions and miracles." Now, many people find that difficult to understand. But if I am a small person in a satellite going to the moon, I am travelling in a much more exalted way than anybody who's travelling to England in any form of transport you can get. That makes sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm in a superior flight. It's as simple as that. And I'm going to a superior goal. That's what he's saying. So no matter how small and apparently unimportant you are to yourself or to anybody else, the living in the divine will is the sanctity of sanctities, and therefore does in fact surpass all the prodigies, sensational conversions and miracles of the past. Isn't that incredible? "Rather, in comparison, the souls who do my will are queens." That's the Song of Songs, chapter 6, verse 8. "And it is as if all others were at their service." Look at the difference in the status of the two. "It seems that the souls who do my will do nothing, because it's a completely interior mission, while they actually do everything, because being in my will, they act in a divine manner, in a hidden and surprising way. So, they are the light that illuminates. They are the winds that purify. They are the fire that burns. They are miracles that make others do miracles. Notice they are miracles. Because to live like this is miraculous. Those who do miracles are channels. But in these souls, that's those who live in the divine will, resides the power behind those miracles. Isn't that something else? Therefore, people who live in the divine will are the foot of the missionary, the tongue of the preachers, the strength of the weak, the patience of the sick, the rule of the superiors, the obedience of the subjects, the tolerance of the slandered, the firmness in dangers, the heroism of the heroes, the courage of the martyrs, the sanctity of the saints, and so with all the rest. I'd love to know what all the rest are, wouldn't you? Being in my will, they concur with all the good that can exist, both in heaven and on earth. That is the operative statement there. And the rest of it is simply illustrating it. Is that okay? Because being in the divine will, you concur with whatever God is doing, no matter what he's doing or where he's doing it. This is why I can surely say that these souls are my true hosts, but living hosts, not dead ones. Now, what is it about the little wafer that you and I receive as communion? It carries the actual presence of God. And if it didn't carry the actual presence of God, we wouldn't call it Holy Communion. We wouldn't call it a sacred host, would we? So what Jesus is saying here is that people who live in the divine will are his true host. That means he is actually living within us. That's what you have to take on board. He is actually living within us, and therefore he can work through us. He can look at someone through your eyes. He can speak to someone through your lips. He can approach somebody through your feet. He can help somebody through your hands, and so on and so forth. He can love someone through your heart. They are my true hosts, but living ones, not dead ones. In fact, the accidents that form the host are not full of life. That means the bread, okay, or the wine. They're not full of life, nor do they influence my life. But the soul is full of life. And by doing my will, that's living in the divine will, she influences and concurs with all that I do. So this is something you've got to read over and over again and ask the Lord to enable you to absorb it. This is why these hosts consecrated to my will. Now, there is a prayer of consecration to the divine will. But you can say a prayer of consecration and not be consecrated to the divine will. Have I confused you?
No.
Okay. Because consecration means I actually hand myself over completely. And I can say the words of a most beautiful prayer, and I may not have interiorly handed myself over. I may not have this wonderful prayer in my possession. I may not even know it's written, but I may hand myself over to the Lord and I'm consecrated to him. That's like saying a husband and wife actually become one by handing themselves over to each other. It's not just something you write on paper. It's not just something you celebrate in a church. You actually do the action of giving to the other. I'm making sense, aren't I?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what he's talking about. That's what consecration is, that we actually give ourselves to him. And whether you do that with the wonderful words that Louisa has given to us, yeah, or whether you do them with your own awkward, stuttering words, doesn't actually make any difference.
Yes.
What matters is that you do it. Is that okay? And mean it. Yeah, that you actually do it and you mean it. So the soul is full of life and in doing or living in my will, she influences and concurs with all that I do. This is why these hosts consecrated by my will are more dear to me than the very sacramental hosts. Why? Because the sacramental hosts can't give him any response. And if I have reason to exist in the sacramental hosts, it is to form the sacramental hosts of my will. So in other words, one consecration is a step to the other. Okay. My daughter, he said, I take such delight in my will that in simply hearing one speak about it, I feel overjoyed. So he's overjoyed at this class.
Yes.
Because we're actually speaking about it. And I call the whole of heaven to make feast. You didn't think of heaven was celebrating every time you came here, did you?
No.
Imagine, he said, yourself, what will become of these souls who will actually do it, that's who will actually live in it as distinct from reading about it. In them I find all the contentment, and to them I give all the contentment. Their life is the life of the blessed in heaven. You're already living the life that the blessed in heaven are living. The only difference is that on earth you also have suffering and purification, whereas in heaven their suffering and purification is finished. Two things only do they cherish, desire and yearn, my will and love. Now, would you ever take your pen and put a ring around those words? Because I've told you many times that divine will and love is the summary of the 36 volumes. Divine will and love. So even if you never had an opportunity to read the whole of the 36 volumes, once you try as best you can to live in the divine will and to love with Jesus' love, you are actually fulfilling what is being said in these volumes. Does that make sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So all they want is my will and love. They have little to do, while in fact they do everything. The virtues themselves remain absorbed in my will and in love, and so they have nothing to do with them anymore, since my will contains, possesses, and absorbs everything, but in a way which is divine, immense, and endless. This is the life of the blessed. Tony Hickey calls that infinite, perfect, and eternal. That's his great expression, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. So even the virtues that you have been living, they're all taken up into the divine will and into love. And therefore, they're all transformed and they operate at a much higher plane. Now, that needs a good bit of thought put into it. So let's go to March the 20th, 1912. Everything is in giving oneself to Jesus. Now, notice the little word, everything. I like ringing particular words that are just absolutely essential to the whole thing. Everything is in giving oneself to Jesus. You see, you could study all of this stuff. You could give lectures on it. But if you haven't given yourself to Jesus, you're outside of it. And you're in the position then that St. Paul said that having taught others, I could be lost myself. I remember that quite frequently. So I'm not going to do finding myself in my usual state. I'm just going to give the message. Is that okay? Jesus said, my daughter, they, that's the priests, do not want to understand that everything is in giving oneself completely. Now, the completely is 100% to me. And in doing my will always and in everything. Now, that's living in the divine will. So what Jesus is saying there is the whole thing hinges on us giving ourselves completely to the Lord and on living in the divine will always. You see, you'll hear me saying, when we speak in Drumantine, that I have a problem with Louise's writings. That everybody will say, she's been teaching it since 2011. How can she have a problem with Louise's writings? The problem is that in volume one, Louisa had three spiritual marriages. Three. And the whole 35 volumes that sit on volume one sits on the fact that the person who experiences this has had three spiritual marriages. Now, don't put your hands up if you've had three. Don't even put your hands up if you've had two. Do you see, we're in a different situation altogether to her. And so all of these explanations are to try and get us on board, because we haven't had her experience. And even worse than that, we're not victim souls either. So we're coming at this with frightful disadvantage. So we just need to be understanding and patient with ourselves, yeah. And if you find, oh God, I didn't think of that for a few days, it's all right, just start now. It's okay. Because we're not where she was, okay. And so we have to understand, you see, union with God is giving yourself completely to him and living in his divine will. That's what it is. So here we are, and it's volume 11. And after all the instruction we've got, here we are hearing something completely basic again. And Jesus says, once I have obtained this, I myself keep pushing the souls. In other words, if you get somebody that far, it's like the teacher who knows that this kid can do well in the leaving certificate and then starts pushing. Am I right or am I right? Yeah. Start pushing them to try and achieve what they're actually capable of doing. So I keep pushing the souls, saying to each one of them, my daughter, take this enjoyment, this comfort, this relief, this refreshment. This is the difference. If they had taken those things before giving themselves completely to me and doing my will always and in everything, these would have been human things. You see, before you give yourself completely to the Lord, the problem is we're doing too much on the human level. He says, give yourself completely to me and I will give you everything you need, but on a higher level. It's not that he wants to strip you of everything. It's that he wants to give you things on a much higher plane, and the spiritual and the human don't mix. He said, and afterwards, they are divine. So the divine and the human don't mix. And that's why you'll hear as we go on in the writings, the dangers of the human will, of falling back, you know. There's a very interesting text in Revelation 12, where we're told that the tail of the dragon pulled one third of the stars from the sky to the earth. Okay, now there are at least three or four levels of interpretation of that. I just want to give you one. And that is, the devil wants to pull every one of us down from the spiritual level, that's heaven, down to the human level, which is earth. Because we'll have lost everything that was offered to us in the divine will. So I'm just giving you an interpretation of that for divine will people. Is that okay? Because the amazing thing about scripture is when you interpret it according to a particular group, it's amazing how it fits. It's just something that struck me recently. To pull us down from the spiritual to the human. You see, the human was where we started. And there's no point in falling off the mountain now that you've climbed it. You know what I mean? I saw that the other day when we were climbing that mountain. It was hard enough to get up. You wouldn't want to fall back, you know. And Jesus said, and since these are my things, I no longer feel jealous. And I say to myself, if she takes illicit pleasure, she takes it because I want it. Isn't that interesting? And if she deals with people, if she converses licitly, it's because I want it. And if I didn't want it, she'd be ready to stop. Isn't that interesting? Because you see, you're committed to his will. Therefore, I put things at her disposal because everything she does is the effect of my will, no longer of her own. Okay. So on the way to experiencing that in its fullness, it's good to say to the Lord, I only want it if you want it. I like this. Or I would really like to have that or whatever, but I only want it if you want it. And what you've done is you've shifted the plane just from the purely human to the divine to let the Lord take over. Okay. Tell me, O my daughter, what have you lacked since you gave yourself completely to me? I've given you my tastes, in other words, my own desires. They usually use the word tastes for desires. My pleasures and all of myself for your contentment. This in the supernatural order, but in the natural order also. I've not allowed you to lack anything, confessors, communions and all the rest. Now, she was in a bed, so she didn't need all the things that you and I need. Rather, since you wanted me alone, you did not want the confessors so often. But wanting everything in abundance for one who wanted to deprive herself of everything for me, I didn't listen to you. So, in other words, he supplies all her needs. Now, people who are living at that level say that the Lord does, in fact, want to supply all your needs. And the word is A-double-L. We spend our times worrying about why we can't supply them. And we don't trust him enough to let him do it. Daughter, what pain I feel in my heart in seeing that souls do not want to understand this, even those who are said to be most good. So my comment there is from Teresa of Avila, St. Teresa of Avila, God alone sufficeth. Now, we certainly saw that with Mary of Magdala in St. Baume. She chose God alone. So April the 4th, 1912, the divine will must be the centre of everything, because the divine will is the centre of the Blessed Trinity. The Blessed Trinity is the centre of everything that exists. Therefore, naturally, the divine will must be the centre of our lives. That's just logical, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So Jesus said, my daughter, my will is the centre. The other virtues are the circumference. Now, from here on in, you'll find him using the wheel often enough. If you just draw a wheel and spokes, you know what he's talking about here. Just put a little wheel and spokes right beside it, and you know what he's talking about. My will is the centre, and the virtues are the circumference. He's going to use that image many times. Imagine a wheel in whose middle all the rays are centred. What would happen if one of these rays wanted to detach itself from the centre? First, the ray would make a bad impression, that's sure. Second, it would remain inoperative because no longer being attached to the centre, it would no longer receive life and it would be dead. And the wheel in moving would actually get rid of it, so the spoke would fall off. Such is my will for the soul. My will is the centre. All the things which are not done in my will and only to fulfil my volition, even if they're holy things, virtues or good works, these are like rays detached from the centre of the wheel. They are works and virtues without life. That actually requires a good deal of thinking. It's all right to read the words on the page, but I have to look at my life and say to myself, anything in my day which is not done in the divine will, even if it's something holy, something that I consider religious, okay, I'm not going to give any examples for fear anybody would quote me. Even if I consider them virtuous or good works, he says, if they're not done in the divine will, they're useless. Because the divine will is the centre of everything. So the thing we've got to connect all the time is connect into the divine will. Fuse all the time, yeah. And even if you forget the word fuse, you've got to keep on saying with your divine will or in your divine will or something. You've got to say you're connecting so that this is actually happening. Because it's important that he includes even holy things. And like the rays detached from the centre of the wheel, they would be useless. They are works and virtues without life. That's a waste of time, isn't it? Mm-hmm. They would never please me. Now, that's a bit you underline. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to live in the divine will and you're doing something that's not attached to his divine will, he said it won't please him, naturally enough. Rather, I would do everything to get rid of them and to punish them That's the bit that shocked me.
That's strong.
So I just put exclamation marks after that in my book and said, NB. Why would you punish them? Just think of yourself taking a child, young child, maybe down the town to do something, and the child is not connecting with you. You're the one that knows the safety of the journey. You know the dangers of the road. You know where you have to go. You know what has to be achieved. And the child is pulling away from you all the time. You will tug at that child, won't you? Mm-hmm. And you will speak to that child and say, "This is what you this is what we have to do." So I don't think "and punish them" means divine judgment. I think it means correction. That's why I gave you that example. So April the 10th, 1912, trusting souls are the outpouring and enjoyment of the love of Jesus. I always change the word amusement. We don't use it in the way it's being used here. But you can say that a parent can enjoy their children, isn't that right?
Mm-hmm.
So the big lesson here is trust and confidence. Now, this is terribly important because Saint Therese of Lisieux said, "You will get exactly out of God the amount that you trust him for." But think of yourself again with small children, and the child that can get most out of you is the one who really trusts you and has total confidence and tells you you're the greatest daddy that ever lived, or your greatest mummy who ever lived, you know what I mean? And the child who has this enormous trust in you can, in fact, get a much better response out of you. So this is a normal part of a relationship. OK, so Jesus said, "My daughter, the souls who will shine the most." Now, that's Daniel 12:3, book of Daniel. "Will shine like stars," he says, Daniel 12:3. "The souls who will shine the most, like bright gems in the crown of my mercy, are the souls who have more trust." Now notice the crown of my mercy. He doesn't say the crown of my wisdom, the crown of my justice, the crown of anything else, the crown of my mercy. The thing we need most from God, as you know, is mercy. And the meaning of mercy is love given to somebody who doesn't deserve it. They're the souls who have more trust, because the more trust they have, the more they give space for the attribute of my mercy to pour into them any grace they want. Now, if you want very good reflections on this, just read Saint Faustina. She's talking about that all the time, isn't she? Yeah. And what was her prayer? Wasn't it, "Jesus, I trust in you"? Yeah, "I trust in you." And so this is the same type of message. And it's given in 1912. So it's given approximately around the same time that Jesus is giving the messages to Faustina. Now, it's not the exact time, but, you know, around the same time, from the same person on the same issue. So, of course, it's the same. Mm-hmm. And it's just important for us to know that the Lord was speaking to other people besides Louisa during these years. So the more you trust, the more you'll get any grace you want. I like the "any grace you want" bit. Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you've heard me say this before, that the Lord has told me to tell everybody I'm in contact with that he wants us to trust him beyond reason. Okay. So on the other hand, the soul who does not have true trust herself closes the graces within me. In other words, you prevent the grace from coming. "Remaining always poor and unequipped, while my love remains constrained within me and I suffer very much. And in order not to suffer so much and to be able to pour out my love more freely, I deal more with those souls who trust than with others." Okay? Proverbs 8:31. "The Lord delights to be with the children of men." Now, there's lots of psalms that deal with trust as well.
Proverbs
8:31. So with the souls that trust me the most, with these I can pour out my love, I can play. That's not our image of God, is it?
No.
And yet it comes up quite frequently in Louisa. And also that Proverbs 8:31, the Lord delights that he's, the text goes on to say he's ever at play. That's not our image of God. We were given a very distorted image of God. That I can play, I can cause loving contrasts, since there's no worry that they might take offence or become fearful. On the contrary, they become more brave and they take everything in order to love me more. Now, the way I would translate that into our language is to say, be yourself. Because one of the things that's very notable in these writings is Louisa really is herself in responding to the Lord. Therefore, trusting souls are the outpouring and the enjoyment of my love, the ones who receive more graces and are the richest. So that's a very important one. Okay. So April the 20th, 1912. How nature itself tends towards happiness, and the difference between human desires and divine desires. The word is tastes here. Jesus said, my daughter, nature tends towards happiness with an irresistible force, because we were made by God for eternal happiness. But with reason, because it was made to be happy and of a divine and eternal happiness. Now, your penny catechism told you that if you're old enough. Okay. We were made to know, love and serve him on earth and be happy with him forever. So that's this move that's in the human race. But to their own great harm, some get attached to one taste, some to two, some to three, some to four. And the rest of their nature remains either empty or without taste, embittered, annoyed and nauseated. So you can, instead of moving towards happiness, you can get hooked on alcohol, drugs, sex, power, money, whatever it is, and you can actually destroy yourself. In fact, human tastes, even holy ones, are mixed with a little bit of human. Now, you see, the human and the divine don't mix. One has to give way to the other. And that's the very thing that happens in death, that we leave the human behind and only the divine part of us goes on. In human tastes, even holy ones, they're mixed with a little bit of human. They do not have the strength to absorb the whole of one's nature and to overwhelm it completely in the taste. More so, since I keep embittering these tastes so as to be able to give the creature all my tastes, which being innumerable, have the strength to absorb the whole of her nature in her taste. Now, the way it is stated there is a little bit awkward. Notice that the Lord says, I keep embittering these tastes. What he's saying is, I don't let you find total happiness in sex, power, money, or whatever it is. I make sure that you experience that the disillusionment of this stuff. And the disillusionment of this stuff will make you turn back to the true source. Can anyone give greater love than this? That in order to give the greatest, I take away the little. And in order to give the all, I take away the nothing. Now, you started doing that with children at a very early stage when you took a knife out of the little hand and you put a toy back in. You took the thing that would hurt and you gave back the thing that they could actually enjoy. You took something dangerous that the child had picked off the table or whatever else that was going to harm them, and you put into the little hand something that would help them. So the Lord says he does this with us all the time. And notice, the little thing is the human thing and the great thing is the divine thing. In order to give all, I take away the nothing. Because you see, the place we're supposed to be all the time is in our nothingness. I call it the safe place. So the nothings that we cling to, money, sex, power, whatever it is, alcohol, drugs, whatever it is that we cling to, they're absolute nothings. You can't take them with you. You'll hear me talking in Drumantine that they'll be under the list of prohibited baggage. Because I'll be talking about us taking an aeroplane flight to heaven, and the prohibited baggage list is very long, and what the baggage allowance is very little. And as the Lord's getting me to work, I've been working on this for ages, it struck me that there's so little you can take. I said, Lord, it's like travelling with Ryanair. You only have your pyjamas and your toothbrush. You're only allowed love, you see. Love, joy and peace to take with you. But the prohibited baggage, the list is as long as a wet week. And of course you get your scrutiny on the way. St. Peter says, no, you can't have that. That's not allowed. That's not allowed up here. So what the Lord wants me to do for you in Drumantine is to translate a lot of very special stuff into very ordinary language so we can actually hear it. And that not only can we hear it, but we can pass it on to other people as well. So he takes away the little thing, the nothing. And yet this operating of mine is taken badly, he said, by creatures. Yeah, they clench the fist to God, and how can God be a good God and do that to me? You know. And that's because we don't understand that he's trying to give us something greater. Okay. Now, there's a big surprise in the next one, April the 23rd, 1912. How in all things Jesus proves his love for the creature. Notice, if you're going to ring something in all things, good, bad and indifferent, he shows his love. Because God is love, he can't operate any other way. And true sanctity is doing the divine will and in reordering all things in Jesus. Okay. So, Jesus said to Louisa, my daughter, sometimes I allow a fault in a soul who loves me in order to clasp her more tightly to myself. Now, that should be a big surprise for you, because I don't know about you, but when I was learning about holiness and everything, I thought no faults were allowed, that you had to be sort of plu perfect. But that's not actually so. One of the most famous answers to this that I got was in a book I read about St. Gertrude the Great. Have you heard of Gertrude?
Oh, yeah.
Herself and Mechtild, her sister, were orphaned when they were very young. And you're talking back the 11th century, I think, 10th or 11th. And they were put into a convent, the poor kids. And when they grew up, they both joined the sisters. And eventually, fast forward, Gertrude becomes the most famous abbess on the earth. So much so that cardinals and bishops and abbots and everybody were consulting her for her wisdom and so on. And one day Mechtild, her sister, was praying, and she said to the Lord, I don't understand this. Gertrude is famous, you know, all over the earth for being the holiest, whatever. And all these abbots and all these important people are coming to consult her, but they don't live with her. And so the Lord said, what's your problem? And she said, you know, in a convent, she said, we have to ask permission for everything. That still persists in convents. And she said, you can go into our office and she could snap at you. And then in the afternoon, she's entertaining these cardinals and bishops and, you know, giving them advice and everything. I don't get it. And that's when Jesus told her that Gertrude asked him, he said, at least, I'm exaggerating now, 100 times a day to try and deal with her touchiness or whatever it was. He said, I won't do it. He said, I refuse to heal her. And Mechtild said, well, why would you refuse to heal her? He said, well, it gives you an opportunity to grow in humility. It gives other people an opportunity to grow in patience and other people an opportunity to grow in love. And she continues to grow in humility. She's the humblest person on earth. That's what Jesus said. Find that interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're inclined to demand that other people are perfect. Instead of accepting a person as presented.
Yes.
And allowing whatever that presentation does to you to make you grow. Because he has to use something. And the book of Proverbs says, iron sharpeneth iron. A man is refined by contact with his neighbor. Ta-da! Interesting. Here's Jesus saying it here. I allow a fault. Sometimes I allow a fault in a soul who loves me, because Gertrude loved him, in order to clasp her more tightly to myself and oblige her to do greater things for my glory. In other words, the person is continuously stimulated to have to try and improve. In fact, the more I give to her, permitting even faults, with an S on it, in order to be moved to greater compassion for her miseries and to love her more, filling her with my charisms. Now, there's a wrong spelling in my book. It says charismas. Knock out the A. Charisms. The more I compel her to do great things for me. Now, notice that the Lord is using the person's fault to make other people grow in holiness and to make the person herself grow in holiness. We need to let God do his own business, don't we? Instead of demanding that other people become the way I think they should be. Because you see, if I demand that you become the way I think you should be, it's going to let me off the hook, isn't it?
Yes. Yes.
I won't be challenged by it.
My cross will be taken away.
Yeah. And so if you stay the way you are and I stay the way I am, the Lord can use us all to help each other.
Yeah.
So it's this grand acceptance of the other. It's beautiful, isn't it? Because that's what love is. There's this grand acceptance of the other. My daughter, he said, my love for the soul, they keep on using the word creature here. My love for the soul is great. Do you see how the light of the sun invades the earth? If you could see, this is the beginning of rounds here. And you'll recognize the text because I put them into the rounds I wrote. If you could see how many atoms out of that light, in those atoms of light, you would hear my melodious voice. One after the other, they would repeat to you, I love you, I love you, I love you. In such a way as to give you no time to count them. You would remain drowned inside love. And indeed, I love you, I love you, I love you. In the light that fills your eyes, I love you in the air that you breathe. I love you in the whistling of the wind that touches your hearing. I love you in the warmth and in the cold felt by your touch. I love you in the blood that flows in your veins. My heartbeat says, I love you in the beating of your heart. I repeat to you, I love you in each thought of your mind. I love you in each action of your hands. I love you in each step of your feet. I love you in each word, because nothing happens inside or outside of you without the concurrence of an act of my love towards you. That's Psalm 145, verse 17. Psalm 145, verse 17. God only acts out of love. So, one I love you of mine does not wait for another. And your I love yous, how many do you have for me? Louisa said she remained confused. She said, I felt deafened inside and out, full chorus by the I love yous of my sweet Jesus, while my I love yous were so scarce, so limited. And I said, oh, my lover, Jesus, who can ever match you? But with what I have said, it seems that I've said nothing at all that made me sort of that Jesus made me understand. She's not able to express everything, which is normal. But he gives her a vital answer. And I want you to put VIP on the next small bit. It's only three sentences. Then he added, true sanctity is in doing, that means living my will, and in reordering all things in me. Now, this reordering is all that we have learned in the early volumes, fighting the wars with the passions and the human stuff and the this and that and the other, reordering all things in me. Just as I keep everything in order for the soul, so should the soul order all things for me and in me. So everything is to be done through him, with him, in him, for him, for love of him. Okay? So May the 9th, 1912, how we can consume ourselves in love. Now, the message here, the summary of the 36 volumes, Divine Will and Love. Okay. So Jesus said, my daughter, if the will wants nothing but me, if the intellect occupies itself with nothing but knowing me, if the memory remembers nothing other than me, here they are, the three powers of the soul consumed in love. Now, in all future texts, they'll simply be called the powers of the soul, okay? Intellect, memory, and will. The same for the senses. If one speaks only about me, if she hears only what with regard to me, if she enjoys only my things, if she works and walks only for me, if her heart loves only me, if her desires desire only me, here it is, the consummation of love in her senses. So you can see that that is a sublime union with God. Okay. My daughter, love has a sweet enchantment, and it renders the soul blind to all that is not love, making her all eyes for all that is love. So God is love. Love has to take over. Our whole beings have to be reordered in love, in the divine will. That is, if we are to be able to sustain this spirituality, because this spirituality is divine love in divine will. That's what it is. So if our lives are not being reordered into divine love, we're not in the right direction. It's the same for her. Therefore, for one who loves, whatever her will may encounter, if it is love, she becomes all eyes. If not, she becomes blind, stupid, and does not understand anything. The same for her tongue. If she has to speak about love, she feels many eyes of light flow within her word and becomes eloquent. If not, she begins to stammer, ends up dumb, and so with all the rest. So he's talking about a contemplative soul being taken over completely by divine will and divine love, so that everything is love, what you see, what you hear, what you speak, what you think, what you feel, everything. That's a major transformation, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's almost 8:30. What do you want to do? Stop? Because we had a lot of communication before we started. What do you want to do? You tell me. Do you want to do one more? Okay, we'll do one more then. So again, the next one is about love, and it's May the 22nd, 1912. True love is not subject to discontent. That needs to be underlined in green, white and gold. Because it's our discontents that tells us, whatever I have, it's not true love if it has this discontents in it, okay? And I want to start by saying a statement of John of the Cross, where there is no love, put love, and you will find love. That's John of the Cross. Where there is no love, put love, and you will find love. In other words, you will find what you planted. Where there is no love, put love, and you will find love. So Jesus said, my daughter, true love is not subject to discontent. Rather, from the very discontents, it takes the opportunity to change them into most beautiful contentment by virtue of love. Now, that means something happens that I don't particularly like. So instead of sitting with discontent about it, what do? In the divine will, you transform that into divine currency and offer it in reparation or love or thanksgiving or whatever. So you turn what to somebody else would be negative into something positive. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay, do you want me to give you an example? Okay, so here I am, I'm in a group, and somebody in the group gives me a proper snub. It happened recently, so that's why it's topical. Okay, so instead of taking the hurt that pride will take, or the ego will take, you know, somebody hasn't recognized me or loved me or whatever, appreciated me, instead of that, you register it because you're alive, and you say, Lord, I want to put that with all the times you were snubbed by the scribes and Pharisees and the leaders of Israel, so that your merits go on to this. I haven't any. And then I want to put it into your divine will, and I offer it in reparation for all the cases where people are not loving their neighbour or whatever. And you've turned it completely into, not only have you turned it into something positive, you've turned it into real grace. And you offer it, first of all, for the person who snubbed you. How do I know that? Because Jesus actually died for the people who were actually killing him. He died for their salvation. Not just the salvation of everybody, but the actual people who were killing him. So that's how in the divine will you change everything into something completely positive. If you feel the hurt too deeply, then throw yourself into your nothingness. It really helps. It really helps. The nothingness is really the safe place. Okay? But that's what he says, that everything is transformed, okay, and turned into divine currency. So more so, since being content of contentment, I cannot tolerate any, notice the word tolerate, any discontent in the soul who loves me. He doesn't want us to be discontented about anything or negative about anything or disturbed. As I myself feel her discontent more than if it were my own rather than hers, and I am forced to give her whatever thing renders her content in order to have her all conformed to me. Now, if the Lord has to tell me at my age, you know, you're grand, and give you the rub down and everything, you're not very far on the road. You do that to two-year-olds, don't you? And three-year-olds, and you hope they grow up at some stage. Okay. So if we expect the Lord to console us after everything, that tells us we're very far back. Otherwise, he said, there would be some clashing and dissimilar fibres, heartbeats and thoughts, which would make us lose the best of our harmony, and I cannot tolerate all this in one who truly loves me. Now, notice, the reason why he doesn't want it is that love is total unity and harmony. And he doesn't want that harmony spoiled. He hasn't got that kind of union with too many people on the earth. So, moreover, true love operates out of love. That means your motive for doing whatever you're doing is love. Now, we learned from volume 1 to volume 4 that the only real motivation he accepts from us trying to live the divine will is love. And outside of love, it couldn't operate. It asks out of love, and out of love, it surrenders. So love ends all in love, and out of love, it dies, and out of love, it rises again. Okay, so everything is love. So let's come back to the fact that the snob again, okay? I receive it in love, transform it in love, okay? The thing therefore turns into love. You surrender, God has allowed this to happen to you, you surrender in love. So all things are transformed into love. Now that means that for every time you do that, you have made your acceptable baggage this way to heaven bigger. Because love is the only baggage you can actually take. And the more of it you take, the greater your heaven. And so every opportunity, every small little thing that happens to us, if we learn how to transform it into love, and if you have sorrowful or upset feelings, instantly throw them in with the agony of Jesus in Gethsemane and turn it into love. turn it into something positive. And once we learn how to keep transforming things into love, we're fine. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You don't succeed every time, but try and succeed more often than you did.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps. And you know, and if you find that an opportunity came and you missed it, just say, Lord, I want to say sorry for missing that. And move on. And don't give it any more thought. Because any child who is learning, they don't get it all right all the time, do they? So we don't get it right all the time either. So Louisa said, Jesus, it seems that you want to escape me with all this talking. Look at the way she's completely herself. But you have to know that I'm not giving up, she said. For now, you surrender to me out of love. Do for me an act of love and surrender to that which is so necessary to me and to which I am so bound. As for the rest, I surrender everything to you. Otherwise, I will be discontent. How about taking somebody literally? She's taken him literally. And she said, this time you give in to me in love. Otherwise, I'll be discontent. And he's been, it's amazing.
Bit of bribery.
Absolutely. And Jesus said to her, you want to win by dint of discontents. And he smiled and he disappeared. And he smiled because she took up so quickly what he was saying.
Yeah.
And not only that, but she used it against him, which I find fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you want to leave it there for tonight?
Yeah.
And we'll see you next week with God's help.